of the capital expense in the mail.
Okay, I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Higher Ed Workforce Development on Tuesday, February 20th, 2018. And before we get started, Rep. Wisnet, you had something to share?
Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I would really encourage our competent, very loyal administrator to do a letter that we all sign asking for our disability bill to be moved out of Ways and Means. So could you agree to do that? For the employment of people with disabilities committee bill, we went to Ways and Means.
Just want your signature.
If you're under the mic.
Yeah, I don't care about you. What?
You know, they're there, and that's going to then move on next, get on the list in a couple of days from the, you said you indicated you thought the speaker was going to move it.
Let's double.
You know, how much of a fiscal labor? Do you know what the total fiscal?
Well, it's two legislators for 4 days per diem. That's all.
And during lunch days, right?
I said I'd do it for free.
Yeah, and some, if they meet on the committee days, it'll be zero.
Mr. Chair, this is sheer chaos here. What's going on?
You guys have always been too wild, so. Anyway, I'm opening an informational hearing on community college funding. And I'd like to welcome Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association. And as a way of background, as you know, there's a move to try to get additional funding this session for community colleges. You may see a letter going around to sign on. And of course, I wouldn't use this hearing to talk about that probably, but anyway, this would be background information on community colleges, how their funding works. It's different than how the university systems work. So we need to understand that, and here we are. That's all we have today. All yours.
Chair Reardon, members of the committee, for the record, Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association. So as asked to provide some information about community college funding and how the different sources are and how they work together. So I know some of these slides are repetitive that I've shared with you before, but wanted to provide the entire context of the conversation today. So I wanted to start with this quote, which I think is really important, that really for community colleges, we take the most difficult to serve students and we get the least amount of funding. And that's part of the community college mission is just to try to do the best we can for all students, but it is a piece that does make it more difficult. So there's essentially three parts of community college funding. It's local property taxes, the state support fund, and local tuition. And so what this chart shows is essentially those three sources of funding and how they've changed over time. It starts in 1989, pre-Measure 5. And at that point, the local property taxes paid approximately 50% of the cost of education. The state support fund was 30%, and tuition was around 20%. And what you can see from this chart is that as the property taxes decreased, as Measure 5 was implemented, the share from the property taxes plummeted from 50% to just a little over 20%. In that same period of time, the state general fund increased from approximately 30% up to 50%. So they essentially flip-flopped in terms of the funding. What's happened over the last several years is there's been another flip-flop where essentially the state general fund has gone down, and that difference has been made up by tuition. The property tax portion of it has stayed pretty close to 20% since then. And really the variable is between what's paid for by tuition and what's paid for by the state general fund. And you can see at the point we are right now, it's making another shift where, the tuition is going up and the amount of the state's general fund is going down. So this kind of gives you a historical look at those three pieces and how they fit together. So what I want to do is to go into a little bit of detail with each of those three sources of funding, starting with property taxes. Community colleges are under the $5 limit with K-12 and ESDs, and approximately 4% of the total property taxes collected in the state go to community colleges. So you can see the comparison to K-12 and ESDs is 41% of the property taxes. And this is just a snapshot of the property taxes that essentially looks at the year 15-16 to 16-17, And over on the left-hand side, it shows that the community colleges went up 4.4% in their property taxes, which was from $162 million to $169 million. So it was a fairly insignificant decrease.
Are you able to use the mouse and point at anything
up
there? So I'm sorry.
Right, and this line here is
community colleges. Eyes are tired this time of day.
Okay.
Okay.
Then community colleges also have access to local option. None of the colleges have gone out for a local option bond. Generally, the amount that would be available to them is such a small amount that it's not worth the election to actually go out for the bond. And then community colleges also have local bonds for capital construction. And what you can see in the same period of 15-16 to 16-17, the amount of revenue coming in from local bonds went up 21%, which essentially shows that the community colleges have been more active in their local bond campaigns, certainly with the support from the state to do a dollar-for-dollar match on the programs. The colleges have gone out for the local bonds and been very successful. So the amount that each college, the rate, varies widely between our colleges. And the rates were essentially what was put in place with Measure 5 and compression. The rates have been steady, and the colleges don't have the ability to change those rates. And as you can see from this, there's a wide variety amongst the colleges. It ranges from Oregon Coast Community College, which is 17 cents per thousand, all the way up to Treasure Valley Community College, which is $1.20 per thousand. What happens with this, because it is such a wide variety, in the distribution model for community colleges, we use what's called total public resources, which is the local property taxes and the state general fund together. And the goal is to have equalization so that each, on an FTE basis, each community college receives the same amount of funding per student, whether it comes from property taxes or from the state general fund. And that's a place that was put in effect about 10 years ago to really make sure that students across the state are treated the same. So, and this is just another look at property taxes by community college. This is the amount per FTE funding that each college gets from their property taxes. So again, through equalization, there is a corresponding amount from the state general fund to even it out between the colleges. So I'm going to move over to tuition and fees. It's the other portion of the three sources of funding. You can see from this that the tuition and fees have gone up significantly from 2003, from $2,700 as approximately for a community college student per year up to $4,700. And to put that in perspective, I've got a couple of slides that take a look at comparing Oregon to other states. In the time period between 2002-2003, the ratio of tuition and fees as a portion of median family income was 4.3%. Most recently, the figures from this report is 2012-2013, where it went up to 8.5% of median family income. Which just really shows that as tuition has gone up, the cost per families has increased dramatically. And then looking at actual tuition rates, again, this compares Oregon to the other Western states. This data is from WICHE, which looks at the Western states. And in this, from 2007-08 to 2017-18, tuition for our community college students went up 65%. So again, as the state funding has dropped, it really has transferred over to the students paying for that tuition. So this takes a look at the third portion of funding, which is the state general fund. And this essentially shows what the increases have been in the state general fund and how that compares to a percentage of the state general fund. So the tuition has gone up, the portion of the state general fund that goes to community colleges has been decreasing over the last several years. In 2003-2005, the portion of the percentage of the state general fund that went to community colleges was a little over 4%. In the current biennium that we're in, 2017-19, the community college percentage of the state general fund has dropped to 2.88%, which shows the decisions that have been made in past legislatures to essentially decrease the funding available for community colleges. So now I want to talk a little bit about the last couple of years. And what the next three slides do is compare the community college funding to the university funding. And before I do that, I want to make really clear that even though we're comparing ourselves to the universities, by no means do we suggest that the universities shouldn't have the increases that they've had, but merely want to show some of the disparities between them. So the blue here is the community college budget as a percentage change. The orange is the university budget. So in the biennium where 2011-2013 where we had cuts, community colleges had less cuts than the universities, significantly less cuts, almost 4% cuts for the community colleges and almost 14% cuts for the universities. And what makes sense is that as we've come out of that cutting and to the place where we're making reinvestments, the universities who were cut more deeply than the community colleges have seen a greater increase than community colleges. 13-15, it was 12% for us, 16% for the universities. In 15-17, almost 15% for the community colleges and 27% for the universities. And in this most previous session, 4.45% for the community colleges and 10% for the universities.
Question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Andrea, the 13-15, is that Oregon Promise, the reason it went up so, or 15-17?
Separate, right?
Chair Reardon, Representative Wisnett, the Oregon Promise is separate and not part of the community college budget. I would clarify, though, that these numbers look at total public resources. This slide looks at just the general fund appropriation. The next few slides I'm going to show you include property taxes as well.
Call up, please, Claire. It's not given to you, but it influences your revenue because those students aren't paying you tuition, right? That brings.
Chair Reardon, Representative Wisnett, we get the tuition dollars. Rather than it coming from the students, it comes from the state. So the state pays the students for the opportunity, for the Oregon Promise. So it doesn't make a difference in our revenue plus or minus. It's just money that goes to the students. It's who's paying for it.
That's right.
The thing is, clearly it hits the student or the family bottom line. It doesn't hit the university or the community college bottom line.
That's correct.
Eventually it gets to the community college, but it's not really part of their financial system. So, go ahead.
Thank you. It almost makes me think about we're creating an opportunity for more students to come to community college, but we're not giving the community colleges more money to administer more students, kind of
the way I see that.
So, great for students, but it is impacting our community colleges.
If you average that out over the several year period, what would it look like? Would they be equal? Would there be more overall going to the universities on a percentage basis, or is that possible to answer that?
Chair Reardon, I don't have that information at the moment, but we can certainly follow up with you on that.
Okay. I would appreciate it. I was told once in the past that there was the funding last session was kind of equalizing things out. I'd just like to know whether that's really valid or not.
We'll get that information to you.
Thank you.
Chair Reardon, if I can make a quick comment. I met with U of O this session, and they made an interesting comment. They said a lot of the students who normally would go to U of O are now going to community college because they're getting funding support through our community college support fund, the
Oregon Promise,
thank you. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Young people are taking advantage of this opportunity.
Thank you.
Like a whining child.
So, if I could follow up on that comment, one of the things we've also seen with the Oregon Promise is an increased number of FAFSA filings in the state. The first year of the Oregon Promise, Oregon led the nation in increased FAFSA filings for those graduating from high school. And so we know that's been a very positive impact to bring those additional Pell dollars into the state.
Yeah.
So this slide shows the per student funding based on FTE. Comparing universities and community colleges. This includes total public resources, so this is both the state investment and property taxes. It does not include tuition as part of this figure. And the way that FTE is calculated is slightly different between the two. FTE in community college is 510 clock hours of contact with the students. So it's not necessarily one full-time student doesn't equal one FTE. So it's slightly different. And this shows similar information. This is by headcount. We have significantly more part-time students, and so this essentially shows what the FTE, or I'm sorry, what the headcount funding is for community college students compared to university students. So wanted to address a little bit about the conversations that are occurring about the community college budget currently. And this is the data that we used to come up with the budget request in the 2017 session. And essentially looked at what the various cost drivers were for community colleges. We calculated that by actually asking each community college with each of these pieces how much it would cost in the next biennium. And from that rolled it up to a statewide number in terms of what the increased costs were. PERS obviously is the most significant one. The paid sick leave and minimum wage increases, healthcare, and the Oregon Promise roll-up. The Oregon Promise roll-up are the pieces of the Oregon Promise that relate to the support for the community colleges. And this essentially became the foundation for our legislative ask. The difference between what we received and what we asked for was $64 million. And so there currently, as you know, that there is a request for $32 million for community colleges, which is half of that difference.
Thank you, Andrew. Would you go back to that last slide, please? I've used this slide and the one from the four-year universities in a lot of my comments to people about cost drivers and how to control the cost drivers. The four-year university cost drivers started off at $100 million for payroll increases. You don't have that on your slide.
Chair Reardon, Representative Wisnett, no, we did not. And that was a deliberate policy decision on our part. Those are generally increases that occur by decisions made at the local community college level. We wanted to capture the cost drivers for those that the community colleges did not have under their control.
But that's a cost driver. It's a tremendous cost driver. At the four-year universities, follow up. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and please repeat the question, ma'am.
Well, in the Ways and Means Education, Education, Ways and Means, President Ray and the community colleges have given us cost drivers. And at the four-year universities, the cost drivers were $100 million salary increase, $59 million for PERS, and $39 million for health care. And I've shown your slide and how minimum wage, people don't think about that when we voted for minimum wage, because a lot of minimum wage employees were at the universities, and that's a big cost driver. But you're paying your people, they're getting raises, they're getting more money each year. Is it 3%, 4%, 5%? Theirs was $100 million, so yours has to be going up too. I understand it's the individual university does it, but I think that would be, you have to do that. I'm not saying you're not going to give them more money, but is it unreasonable or whatever? But the universities, that's when they were asking us for $100 million, we gave them $70 million. But their cost drivers was up $200 million. So you're not going to reduce tuition. If your cost drivers are going up $200 million, we give you $70 million to cover that. So I just think that yours is a lot less, of course. I think on your other slide for the last budget thing, you also gave cost of living. I think cost of living was like $11,000 a year or something like that if you were doing that. So
I can certainly bring back information on what the...
And, hey, I'm for you. I'm not against... Excuse me, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm sorry. Can I comment? Continue. I just we need to have the arguments to make for you. And make it sure it's equal. I want to give community colleges more.
Well, thank you. We'll bring that information in.
Could you elaborate on the definition of Oregon Promise roll-up? I want to make sure that's clear.
Sure. Chair Reardon, there were two pieces when the Oregon Promise was created that was funded beyond the grants to the students. So that the two parts were one, $3 million that was given to the Oregon Promise that was dedicated towards additional advisors. Essentially, depending on the size of the college, added either one or two advisors. The idea was specifically to provide that advising support for the Oregon Promise students. As long as the state was making that larger investment, we wanted to make sure that they succeeded.
Okay.
Secondly, there was money that was set aside for what was called AVID-like programs. So it was essentially first-year experience and other type programs that, again, were wraparound services to help students succeed. So it's really the cost to continue those programs. The advisors were not funded in last legislative session, and that's part of the request that we have at the moment is to help fund those additional advisors to help students to essentially take the right classes and to be able to succeed and transfer.
Okay. I sense that Mr. Wyckoff would like to join us. Would you come up?
Chair and members of the committee, for the record, John Wyckoff, Deputy Director of Oregon Community College Association. I just wanted to respond quickly to Chair Reardon's question that I was back there texting our or emailing our researcher to get to your question about whether it sort of equaled out in the funding. Actually, could you go back to the slide on the funding comparison with OUS?
You know me too.
Okay, so in this slide, so she pointed out, we went back to the worst year that they have arguably ever had to be as fair as possible. And you may remember during, this was the height of the Great Recession, our enrollment was absolutely skyrocketing because of what was going on in the economy. That was part of that. So we didn't get as big of a hit as the universities. And then if you kind of look over time, it is more than made up in percent terms of disparity. And you have to remember in this, right, our blue bars are the property tax plus general fund, and theirs is just general fund because that's, right, that's what they get. So this includes our property tax, and with that, they're at a 2-to-1 increase for two biennia and a sizable one for the other. And it more than makes up for that 10% delta in the first one.
Do you have a slide that makes that any more clear than...
We could make one.
That'd be really helpful.
Technology.
That'd be really helpful.
And if I could just one quickly. She also pointed out and said I should point this out, is that our one of the things that Oregon Promise can do when it doesn't get accompanied by funds from the state is it can actually drive down our per student funding. Because you've only given us a third of the, like if we're selling cars, you've given us a third of the cost of the car and then said, but I can have the car, right? Because that's what that pays for, one third of the cost. So if we get that and we don't get accompanying money through either property tax, which is pretty static, or from general fund, it could actually drive down our per student funding if you don't accompany money with it. So that's actually a burden to the colleges. Mm. It's not necessarily a benefit to their bottom line. It can, in fact, be a burden.
You had one of the slides in here talked about the impact on a family and their ability to pay. And I didn't see anything in here. My bias is that a lot of the community college students are from pretty impoverished families, maybe a higher level of poverty perhaps than universities. I can't back that up with any data. Maybe you can, but and yet we have a
8.5%.
You know, doubling the increase on the amount that they have to pay over that period of time, or the percentage increase on that family that's already struggling so much, and then you double the increase on them, just seemed like something we have to keep in mind. It's really an injustice for that to happen. But am I reading that correctly?
Chair Reardon, that's
would you
that's
argue
correct.
With my premise? That,
And because this does look at the medium household income, it's not going to represent for those low-income students the additional burden that they have, and you're correct that many more of our students are low-income.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Any additional questions?
I have just a comment, Chair. And I think, and I work for community colleges, and so I, obviously I'm a great supporter of the community colleges and all the work they've done. When we talk about community colleges, we're really talking about serving the entire community, because our community colleges work with 16 to 60 plus year old folks. And we have to keep that in mind. And I think when I reiterate that in working with such a diverse population, there's so much work that goes into that. And retaining students and helping them stay focused and helping students meet their goals, it literally takes the entire community college community to do that. And equally, I mean, I want to give you as much money as possible because I know all of you are doing such amazing work for our community. Just wanted to make that comment and recognize all the amazing work they're doing, but that they really are serving our entire community.
Yeah, questions, comments? So there's a letter going around. You'll get the opportunity, if you haven't already, to sign on to it. We encourage everybody to look at the data. I would encourage support of additional funding for community colleges. So, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you tell us, you're asking for $39
million. 32. So,
32 million, and what will that do for, is it going to reduce tuition, or is it just to make up where you need to stay with the current tuition?
Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Wisnett, it would help mitigate tuition increases. So at 32 million, it's not significant enough to roll back tuition, but it would keep tuition under the 5% increase statewide. Without that, we do have colleges that are looking at 7 to 8% tuition increases. The other piece that it would do in terms of the funding is to provide more resources for advising. That's been identified as one of our critical needs, and certainly is a piece that would most help our students. So it's really for those two pieces.
May I follow up, please?
Please.
The mentoring program for the Oregon Promise, that the bill really didn't come out right on that. Not only did we screw up, we only funded it for 1 year versus 4 years. But, I'm not sure I understood when Representative Johnson pushed forward that bill that the mentoring was a one-time only, and we had some schools doing in-house and some were doing the private company to do it. Tennessee model, which we was started all this excitement when this committee got briefed on what Tennessee was doing. All their mentoring was volunteers. Have we, we have Aspire and some of those, but have we ever gone out and reached or, probably the best mentoring is peer mentoring. If you pay them minimum wage, even at minimum wage, it would be counseling or mentoring these people. What are we planning ahead? Because that training was provided one time. Is that correct?
Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Wisnett, there were two pieces that were provided. One was that training around first-year experience. And so those costs not only enabled colleges to create their first-year experience, but also to fund personnel to deliver the first-year experience courses. The second part of the funding was around advising, and that's very specifically around advising the students in terms of what classes they should be taking. The work that we're doing currently with Guided Pathways and trying to align students on a more prescriptive pathway as they go through college is heavily dependent on good advising. And Lynn Benton Community College, who has already started their Guided Pathways program, has increased their advisors. I forget the total amount right now, but a significant increase in their advisors to help guide those students through the programs. So it's different than peer-to-peer mentoring. I mean, it is very specific advising. So ideally, it will enable college students to complete faster because they're taking the right classes.
So this presentation is on OLIS. I would encourage you to take a look at it. I know I'm going to need to review it. A lot of numbers, a lot of things happening. You'd be available if somebody had a question or needed?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, we appreciate your putting this together on short notice and coming in today. It's super important work. And unless there's any other questions, I'm going to close this meeting of the House. Oh, I'm closing this informational hearing. And now I'm closing the meeting of the House Committee on Higher Ed and Workforce Development. Thank you all very much.